Okay, so why don't you introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about why you're here at the conference.
Yeah, so my name is Aaron Ott. I'm a supervising transportation surveyor for the state of California in the Department of Transportation. And so my current role is I actually manage our enterprise GIS system, our LRS system, and our HPMS reporting system for the feds. So I'm here at the conference because we're talking about efforts that Caltrans has done in a recovery effort after wildfires in Northern California. And because prior to my current position, I actually managed the North Region GIS in the Office of Surveyors. And so I actively worked on some of the biggest fires that happened in California, unfortunately, such as the Camp Fire, the North Fire, the Dixie Fire. Yeah.
So, I'm in Colorado, so.
Okay, yeah.
With a lot of big forest fires, too. It's
yeah.
Had a safe year last year, but.
Yep, it was pretty decent, yeah. And so, and a big part of what we're doing is we're trying to use tools we already use for our normal construction design delivery projects, such as a UAS technology, mobile LiDAR, various remote sensing to get data fast and get it to our engineers after the fact. So
how did this push toward using GIS to accomplish this happen? What are some of the tools that you've used, and how did you go from wherever you went to where you are now?
Yeah, so one of the big catalysts was actually the car fire back in 2018. So it actually was started from a trailer chain bouncing along the highway system and sparked in numerous places and caused a big fire that actually burned down into the city of Reading. So that triggered a whole bunch of activity from Caltrans, whether it be, you know, fuel reduction efforts. And from my standpoint, like for your question, is this that I had started up a GIS team up in the North Region, and we saw that, and we really didn't do much to help. And we were looking, me and my supervisor, going, we can do more. We can help out a lot more. And in that one, we actually, like I said, we're pretty ineffective. But we started building our capability, and it just so happens in 2018 when that was going on, we were also building a new UAS program or UAV program. And so same thing, we weren't quite up and running at that time, so we weren't able to use it. But by the time the campfire happened later that year, we actually did have all of the pieces in place to help out. And so we jumped into action, and we did do that because one of the issues is how do we get data out to all of our engineers, our environmental folks, our construction folks that are actually doing the recovery work. And so we can get into these disaster zones in smaller groups, such as our small UAS team or our mobile LiDAR team. And so we can get in there, we can get through the barriers, we can go gather that data. And then we use GIS at that point to actually disseminate that data out to everybody. So we have a pretty robust enterprise system inside Caltrans. And we have good enterprise portals. And so we spin up data layers from our image services with the UAS imagery and the mobile LiDAR. We don't use the mobile LiDAR imagery because it's mainly video with the one we were using at that time. Things are changing now, so it's getting different. But and we get that imagery out to the people that are working on the recovery effort but may not be able to actually do a field visit to see the scene.
Okay.
And then the actual LiDAR data, we start point extraction and we start getting topographic information, missing features, guardrail, and out to our engineers. And we spin that up actually also either through a database, we can do our normal processing into Civil 3D, or we do run up certain web feature services that they can pull in directly. So
give me a little more detail about the actual data that you're collecting.
Mm-hmm.
What are, is it pictures of damage, and how is this being used in order to improve services, improve people's lives? What's the difference that it's making?
Yeah, so the difference that it's making is that we're getting in there, you know, basically all of the poor people that had their homes and their lives devastated from these things, they can't get in there until it's declared safe. Yeah, they cannot get back into the community. And one of the things that Cal Fire and Cal OES do is that we have to have certain safety features on the highway. We have to go in and we have to assess the bridges.
Okay.
We have to assess the bridge if it got overhot and if it's still safe. We have to assess the culverts. We have to assess the pavement condition. We have to make sure guardrail is in the places. Like if there's a chance of falling in certain places, we need to replace the guardrail.
So is it all like post-fire damage assessment?
It's all post-fire damage assessment.
It's not preventive or even in the midst of it?
We have started preventative.
Okay.
Yeah. So after the campfire, there was a university study done for Caltrans, and it basically did a vulnerability assessment of our highway system. And so from that, we have started the basically preventative actions where we've started fuel reduction contracts, we've started hazard tree removal contracts, because there's been large death of trees up in the Sierra Nevadas, mm-hmm. whether it be pines, or even now we're starting to see some of the oaks from the drought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we're starting to see a lot of that. So we do that assessment and remove those hazard trees.
Okay.
So we actually do that pre-fire if there's hazard trees in our right-of-way. And then so we do the fuel reduction, the hazard trees, and then the other one that we do that we're doing using that study for is we did a vulnerability such as the access and egress from a community.
Okay.
Like Paradise was a prime example. There was three roads in and out, one of which was a state highway, and they got bottlenecked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're assessing those communities and we're starting to do capacity increase for those roads so that there's better access to them. So
getting back to the system that was used,
mm-hmm.
What are the details that you're collecting and a little bit more about how it works?
Yeah, so like I said, we use our full project delivery process for this. So when we go in and we're doing that, we have multiple photogrammetry UAS systems and multiple LIDAR UAS systems actually. So we go in, we do full normal survey work to collect all of the data as we would a regular design project,
mm-hmm.
and we're doing a capital project. And from that, we do our standard 3D TIM modeling, and we also, at that point, we locate any of the existing features that are out there, which after these fires, there tends to not be many,
mm-hmm.
but if there are any still left, we do map out any of the existing features. And by features, you know, that would be like street lights, street signs, a guardrail, any of that type of control boxes, traffic lights,
mm-hmm.
any of that type of stuff that's out there. And we process it. A lot of this is actually not done in GIS. It's done in our TopoDot LIDAR processing software.
Okay.
And from there, then we process it out either directly into Civil 3D for our design engineers to use,
mm-hmm.
or we put it into GIS for a lot of our environmental people to use.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So if you guys are a transportation agency,
mm-hmm.
The fires go beyond roads. How
yes.
do you decide? Do you just decide that you guys are in charge of all of it, or is there?
So there is a fine line there.
Yeah.
So hazard tree removal, we tend to have our contractors go outside the right of way.
Okay.
And just remove trees for a pretty good swath of
mm-hmm.
the hazard. But typically we have our initial initial contracts in place. So a lot of times we can get contractors on the ground pretty fast after these disasters. So we'll start some of the initial cleanup. And then when Cal OES and FEMA come in,
mm-hmm.
then they'll bring in their contractors. But one of the things that we do is
mm-hmm.
since we have technical expertise with like a field inspection and construction,
right.
is a lot of times our inspectors will actually be out supervising the construction cleanup of the houses that have been burnt and throughout the full recovery effort.
That
so
makes sense. It's kind of
because we have those, we have that technical expertise.
There's some similarity.
Yeah, in other departments like Cal OES doesn't have that technical expertise.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay, so I'm always looking for advice, and so imagining
mm-hmm.
like. People running another town, another DOT or something, they want to start something like this, but what advice might you give them that worked for you that maybe you had to learn maybe the hard way, that they could have to skip learning the hard way and just go straight to being more effective?
So I think the biggest thing is, you know, what everything that we used was all our normal tools.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't go out there and do anything like extremely out there
mm-hmm.
or over the top.
Okay.
And so fortunately in this case, you know, like I said, we had been implementing UAS. We'd been in longtime users of LIDAR at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So we used tools that we knew how to use and that we could use effectively.
Okay.
And the other thing is that you can use this type of event to learn from. because we've gotten good at it, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, Campfire was the first one we dealt with this. I think it took us about 2 weeks to process up our data and get everything out. By the time we rolled around to the North Fire a few years later, we were down to 2 days to get the data out. And we had our imagery out within half a day.
What kind of systems are you using to, you know, not just capture the imagery and the data, but like to know where things are, or to you know, to put more intelligence in the data besides just the raw information?
So we do use TopoDot, which is an insert for MicroStation.
Okay.
Yeah, and we do use Civil 3D.
Okay.
Is what we use primarily. And of course, I wasn't thinking about this, but Trimble Business Center is one of our primary ones for, because we do use a lot of survey equipment from Trimble, and our mobile scanners are Trimble. So we use Trimble Business Center a lot to get the data across, and that's how we get the intelligence into it. And like I said, we're not, when we do this, we use our standard design process.
Mm-hmm.
We just do it in a more rapid emergency fashion.
Right.
So it's not, so all of the tools are in place already.
Mm-hmm.
And the steps are in place to get the data out to where it needs to go.
So it's seeing what happened, where the damage is, what needs to be replaced. How do you go from there into getting the work, the remediation done so that you can move back forward? Those steps.
So that is the difference between our normal process, is that we can call in emergency contractors, and we can have on-call, and we can have boots on the ground within hours to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's done on a force account, or basically a time and materials. Yeah, and we have our, each one of our directors of the districts have the ability to enable these contracts.
Okay.
And they have a certain amount of funding per district per year for these, for the just in case. So,
and what is a typical, some of the typical things that you have to do once a fire goes through? When this,
well,
gets done?
The biggest one is actually the hazard tree removal.
Okay.
In my experience, that is the hardest and longest process that we deal. So after these, so basically any tree that has been assessed to be dead, we remove in order for safety for the public and the highway and the roadway
so
and the community.
Fall down,
yeah, exactly.
Near future.
Yeah, and basically, so when these fires happen, it's actually pretty amazing.
They're
it's
huge areas. I've driven
it's huge. Yeah,
it's crazy.
And it's not just like they're not these burnt cinders and timbers. Sometimes they'll just hit it, it'll burn it lightly and jump to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it is just the blacken husk.
On. Some are right
and
by
so,
the roads, and some are, you know, where do you, how far do you go?
So typically, like for us, like we're doing it, we'll go quite a ways past typically, but not like hugely.
Okay.
So we'll go, I would say probably roughly a quarter of a mile outside. Yeah, so we do go outside of our right of way and clear a bunch of that. But then the other,
in case they might blow over at a later time, or what's
we just have the contractor on the ground, and so it's got to get done, and it'll be done at a later time anyway. It'll just be done by the FEMA or Cal OES contractors.
Okay.
So basically, the government's paying for it, whichever one it is. Yeah, might as well get it done with the people we have.
Get it done while they're there.
Yep. So that's there's not really a great reasoning behind it other than, and I don't think there's even like a clear boundary.
Mm-hmm.
We just have our contractors go out. I think it's a lot of times probably a construction engineer's call.
Okay.
Yeah. That's out there on the grade.
So how these contractors work with, you know, emergency work, obviously they probably have work that they were doing. They get called into that.
So like I said, we always have either one, two, three contractors on call. And they have an existing contract in place with Caltrans in each district.
Mm-hmm.
And they're on call for emergency works. And the contract agreement is that they will have equipment wherever needed within a certain time period.
Gotcha. Whether they're going to stop their own work or not, that's their problem.
Yeah, exactly. And it's basically if they have that contract, you know, we expect them to be at a location within a certain time period that's agreed to in the contract.
They should think about that when they're
Exactly. So we're not too overly worried what their existing workload is in that case.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
And in most cases, I meant the contractors who get on board, they're more than happy to go and help in those recoveries, and they get good publicity for their own company.
Okay.
For doing it.
How might what you're doing be useful for things beyond, you know, fire damage recovery or what?
Yeah. So we're doing an immense amount of cool things that are way more useful beyond fire recovery. So we're very, very active. You know, like I said, in this one, we're pushing the envelope for a UAS LiDAR. We're pushing the envelope for a mobile LiDAR. I think we currently have 6 mobile LiDAR units, and we're looking to increase that to 12.
Okay.
Yeah.
So car-based or?
Car-based. Yeah. And our UAS fleet's getting bigger. We have quite a few LiDAR. I don't know the exact number on them. And a ton of photogrammetry ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the smaller ones. But the LiDAR ones tend to be bigger platforms. And the reason this is important is because across the whole industry, everybody's having a hard time hiring people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, whether it be engineering, surveying, whatever in the industry.
Sure.
And so this is allowing us to get more data faster in the project, earlier in the project, so that we have better scope on the project. And then the other thing that we're doing that's super, super exciting is that we've been working with some of our software developers to actually get them to actually communicate on the back end of the softwares to where we're not doing ETL processes from a software like, say, Trimble.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be able to export directly into the other platforms that we're using. So, and then not only that, but so we've been actually working with Trimble, Esri, and Autodesk potentially to be able to talk to each other and the back ends of their software.
And so how's that? How will that help? What does that improve?
So what that will improve is that currently our process is that when we gather data in, say, Trimble Business Center, which is our primary data collection software, we have to run through routine scripts that we've created, ETL processes after the fact, that converts it into a format that we can then import into Civil 3D. So it goes into Civil 3D. We use a more archaic shape file right now. We're looking to get into a geodatabase format.
Okay.
But then it comes into the Civil 3D, and Civil 3D can spin it up, and it's live. We use a bunch of the shortcuts on it so that it's live and our people see it. But now if our survey crews collect something, it's no longer live out there. They have to refeed it. And the other thing is that we're going into an asset management cycle, you know, where we're getting a lot of our funding through assets, but we have no ability to get a lot of this information easily out into other systems. And our asset management system moving forward is most likely going to be a GIS based, but it's being developed, so not 100% sure what it's going to look like in the end.
Okay.
And so if we go to a format where Trimble is talking to a geodatabase directly, and Autodesk can already talk to the geodatabase directly because they're a partner with Esri, and at that point, then we have live data. As the surveyors collect it or update it, it's live. As our engineers see it, it's live. So we don't have those potential, you know, amendment 1 through 10 where you're working on 3 and you find out we're actually on 10.
Sure.
And then you've built something that's not correct.
I have no idea why every once in a while it gets super loud in here.
Yep.
And then it can be pin drop quiet for a long period of time. I haven't figured this out yet. How does the funding by asset work? Because I'm not that sure. I'm super familiar with that.
Yeah, so we're being required to move into assets. And I don't know if this is a federal requirement or a state requirement.
Okay.
So we basically name our, so a lot of our funding comes by type. So our major assets is a culvert, bridge, pavement, and an ITS element, which is the traffic lights, the signals, that type of stuff.
Okay.
So those are our major funding. So when we do a project, that's where the money comes from. So we have to incorporate certain assets, and we have to improve the asset condition, whether it be good, fair, poor. And so our projects now, a lot of the project funding is based on those type of assets. And there's other assets coming into play, like active transportation, bike and peds, and complete streets and stuff like that, that is additional funding sources. So a lot of our project money is actually tied into the assets.
So it's like, I'm just trying to understand. So it's like, like a list of this many lights, this many culverts, this whatever.
But it's also that it's a list of this many assets that are in like poor condition.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's not just we need to replace this many assets. We're doing an assessment of we have this many lights that are in poor, this many lights that are in fair, and we need to get them up to good.
It's like going to a mechanic when there's so much labor is associated with each one of those, and that's the cause. Is that kind of how it works?
So it is, we do a full engineer estimate, which is similar to that, with it. And then it's determined, you know, that it's going to cost this much. We determine, you know, each year we have a certain budget for our capital projects.
Okay.
And we go, we want to accomplish this much of each asset and this much work. And then
this is how much time
we
expect. This
yeah,
is
then
like
we
that.
Pick out projects that would be the you know, the most bang for a buck.
Mm-hmm.
Because realistically, I think on any given year, we're probably only hitting about 1/3 of our needs
mm-hmm.
for the state because of funding. So,
okay, so now this saw this success with the wildfires. What do you want to do next before the next big wildfire that's eventually going to happen?
So we've actively been working on that. So
okay.
Our maintenance actually has a office now that is, their whole mission is fuel reduction along the highway system.
Mm-hmm.
So we actively have our maintenance crews out reducing fuel.
Okay.
Yeah, so yeah, so something like the car fire won't happen again.
Right. Just
because
it sparked that way or
yeah,
power lines. Because
it'll still potentially burn, but it's going to be, you know, a foot high flame versus a
mm-hmm.
5-foot high flame, so it won't get up into the trees.
Okay.
And then the Cal Fire can come in and suppress it easily.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then we actively continue doing the hazard tree removal. We have crews out there doing that work all the time. And like I said, we've been working on a potentially ingress egress
mm-hmm.
of communities. Yeah, and those are some of the major ones. And then, of course, we work with PG&E and other partners
right.
for their needs, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what about the big fires in the middle of the mountains? That's just totally separate because there's no people, no assets?
Yeah, so that is, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So like a prime example of that one was the August Complex, which
mm-hmm.
was the biggest fire in California,
yeah.
but it happened in the coastal range where there was no people. So a large portion of it just let it burn.
Our biggest one in Colorado about the same time was
yeah.
in the middle of nowhere until very much toward the end. It got near a part of a town, and then all of a sudden, you know, things jumped up and escalated.
Yeah.
Some
and that's one of the big things, yeah, is just that, yeah. Is that if it's out in the rural communities, like right now I'm sure you do too, I monitor an app for fires because while we were at the convention, I had two fires pop up around my house.
Really?
Because I actually live in the foothills up in the...
Okay.
I live up where some of those big fires were at.
Mm-hmm. I live in the mountains of Colorado too.
Yeah.
No real forests directly
okay.
around me, but
yep.
they're in the vicinity. I can see them.
So, like, the North Fire actually burned to within 9 miles of my house. And that one was moving 25 miles in 12 hours.
I think the closest one I got was 25, 30 miles.
Okay,
and
good.
It wasn't that big of a one.
Yeah.
The really big one, though, it was maybe 100 miles away, but
yeah.
the plume was so big.
Mm-hmm.
It was bigger than the one that was 25, 30 miles away. It was
like, yeah, that was, yeah, it was incredible. It was actually funny when COVID came around. We actually already had an N95 mask from the smoke from the wildfires. We didn't have to go get any.
No, we had a lot of days where...
Yep.
I mean, I see what the people were complaining about in the Northeast.
Yep.
You guys are playing.
Yep, they haven't seen it. Yep.
But we've been calm. It's been weird how it's been nice.
Yeah.
And then now everybody else is getting their turn to
yeah.
dry and roast. And I'm sure it's going to be...
And it's interesting, too, you know, the power of GIS and some of what we've been working with. You can see how these big fires, they stop at the old fire break.
Mm-hmm.
So when these fires happen in clears to undergrowth, it really creates a natural break for them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like on my mapping that we put together, you can see where the Paradise Fire is. You can see where the Dixie Fire is
mm-hmm.
and where the North Fire is. And it's very clear that they stopped at
yeah.
the edge of each one of those.